Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We're going to be talking about discipline. There were so many questions for Tina Payne Bryson. She's going to come on here and she can talk about so many different things, and all of the questions that were submitted were all about discipline, timeouts, boundaries for children, what age to start doing that, how to handle tantrums. So we're going to get to all of that with Tina. Thank you so much for taking time to come and chat with me. I told you that the book you have behind you, Bottom Line for Baby, I literally still have it. Even though I've read the entire thing so many times, I still keep it right on the side table in the nursery and in Eloise's room. And I just like grab it and pick it up just like whenever I need to. So thank you for writing that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, it was the book I most wanted when I was a new mom because I was getting all this competing advice about, you know, topics that everybody had an opinion about. And so I would go and research and try to, you know, make what decision am I going to make? And then I'd read some more stuff and then I'd just be confused because it was competing, compelling advice.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me just make it easy for exhausted parents who have to make quick decisions. So it's alphabetical. You just flip to whatever topic you're trying to make a decision about. And it summarizes kind of the main takes or approaches, what the science says and what the bottom line is. And then there were several of them where I wanted to weigh in about what I did or how I handled it. Because sometimes I chose to go against what the science said because I really needed to do what worked for my family. And sometimes the science competes. Like one piece of science says, you know, a well-rested, you know, mother is best for baby. And then another one's like, no, you should get up and respond to your baby's needs in the middle of the night. And I'm like, those two don't go together. So anyway, that book, the purpose of that book is to empower parents to trust themselves, trust their babies, and do what works for their families. So,
yeah, I mean, I loved that part of it, and also loved that it was like very just to the point. Like, it has what the science says, it has what, you know, what else is what is said about the subject, and then like, you know, I know that you wove in your thoughts and opinions on like certain subjects, like you just said, but it was like everything condensed down into like what you spend on Google for hours. It's all right there and very convenient. And I feel like for me, at least, like when I would sit and be breastfeeding, and even now, it's like so much better than just sitting there on your phone the entire time. And you can kind of also like learn things and go over things, and not necessarily all of it applies to having a newborn right away, but just to kind of have those nuggets of wisdom in your vicinity is helpful. But your other book, No Drama Discipline, I listened to it when I'm walking, which I love being able to do that and just like, you know, totally zone out and listen to the book. But I thought it was really interesting because I kind of asked open-ended questions for people to send in whatever questions they might have for you. We got a ton of questions and they were all pretty much about discipline. So,
right. I love talking about it because I think the lens that Dan and I bring in this book is pretty counterculture. And it's different from how a lot of us were raised. And so, it's one of the things I feel most passionate about in my life's work is to reframe how we see our kids' behaviors and how we respond to it in ways that builds their brain and helps them become self-disciplined humans that are empowered to make good choices themselves.
So let's just start off by talking about, because I liked how you in the book, you kind of started off by giving a little bit of an overview on the word discipline and it being like the word disciple. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I was like, oh, this makes so much sense.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny. We, when we were writing the book, a colleague of ours that we respect said, please don't use the word discipline in the title of your discipline book. And we were like, okay, what are you thinking? And she said, well, you know, that word is associated with punishment and with power and control. And that's true. When, you know, like when my grandma would criticize me co-regulating my child and helping him calm down so that he could really listen to my words, she was like, I don't get what you're doing. He just needs to be more disciplined. And what she meant was you need to punish him, right? So that's really the connotation. But when you go back to the original meaning of the word discipline, it's like disciplines in a college, or you think about Jesus's disciples. It's really about teaching and skill building. And just that one thing is a huge reframe, because oftentimes our kid is doing something they're not supposed to be doing, or we need them to do something they're not doing, and we want cooperation, but we often immediately jump to like, what should I do to them so that they'll do what they're supposed to do? And this is a reframe that's like, what do I need to do for them to give them the practice and the skill building that's required for them to automatically become self-disciplined over time as development unfolds? So it's really like every moment, and we please don't take advantage of every moment. You'll drive yourself crazy. Like, your kid's going to give you lots of opportunities. But what I'm saying, you know, when my kid is having a tantrum, I'm not in that moment thinking, oh, I'm so grateful for this wonderful opportunity to build skills and integrate his brain. Yeah. But if we have this lens, all of those moments, the hardest moments, are actually opportunities to build skills and teach so that they know how to do it on their own.
Yeah. I mean, I when I first heard just like changing the word, you know, because to me, discipline is just like, from how I grew up, the word discipline is like not negative, but hard. Like, the word is like, it comes with like a toughness kind of, and being able to hear that kind of change on the definition of the word discipline and thinking of it as something that's actually positive as far as like teaching a child or teaching somebody about something was really interesting for me, and also really interesting to just kind of change how I viewed the word discipline just to begin with. Yeah. And I think like when you're talking about punishment also, I feel like discipline and punishment have always kind of come hand in hand to me, because I feel like you, just the way, again, that like I grew up and have been used to, is like discipline, you know, is like teaching you structure. It's like, it comes with punishment. It comes with, if you don't do this, you will be punished, but that kind of mentality. But you're saying to change that framework and that mindset into something that doesn't really involve punishment.
It doesn't. In fact, let me say it this way. Oftentimes punishment and throwing consequences at kids, which are usually the first thing we just think of in the moment that kind of makes sense to us, it's usually not thought through as parents, is often counterproductive to our goal. So this is a huge shift in thinking. Let me sort of lay out like a thesis here. Yeah. If the end goal of our children's rearing with us is for them to be, and when it comes to discipline, is for them to be self-disciplined people who are good in the world, who make good decisions, who handle themselves well, who care for others, who regulate their emotions, who put the brakes on their behavior, right? Self-discipline. If we want them to become that, they have to be given lots of opportunities to practice and to have skill building and to be taught that, right? And one of the ways we think about that is, like, I think about how when I lift weights and I do reps, my muscle gets stronger. The brain is the same way. So when our children get reps practicing how to put the brakes on, or how to go from a dysregulated state back into a regulated state, or to share with someone else instead of being selfish, etc. When they have practice doing those things, they develop the skill.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Now let me go a little further. If we want them to learn, so those are all things they need to learn and practice, they have to be in a receptive state of mind in which to learn. And so that means they have to be ready to receive those messages and learn. And usually in the discipline moments when they're falling apart or we're reactive, those are actually the worst times, because we can think about how our nervous systems are either in a receptive, ready to learn state, or we're in a reactive state where we actually can't process language. We don't learn very well. So then the best way to get our kids receptive is through connection with us and through regulation and through co-regulating and helping them move from these reactive states into receptive states. So let me do the arrow back the other direction, because I worked backwards. So when our children are having a hard time, let's say it's a tantrum, or your four-year-old refuses to get out of the bathtub. In those moments, I think to myself, okay, my child is having a really hard time regulating their nervous system right now. And so I am going to comfort and connect with my child while still holding boundaries. So I want to talk about that too, because this is not a permissive approach at all. Okay. So I'm going to do that, and I'm going to help my kid get regulated and ready to learn. Then when he's ready to learn, that's when I can teach and build skills. And we can talk, I can give really specific examples. And then he's going to get practice doing that to become self-disciplined. When we throw out a consequence or a punishment, it often then takes the child's attention to how mean I am to do that to them, or how it was their brother's fault in the first place. And they actually don't give any attention to what was their role in it, and it doesn't hold them accountable. So sometimes the consequences and punishment get in the way of teaching and skill building, because they make kids more reactive and not receptive.
Right. So just because we had the question about toddler tantrums a couple times, just if people, you know, not knowing what to do when their toddlers are having a tantrum, if you are saying, you know, avoid discipline because it's counterproductive, which of course logically makes sense. But as you said, so many of us as parents, our instinct is to kind of jump right in and say, if you don't get out of the bathtub, you're not going to have ice cream tonight. Right. Or if you don't do this, you're not going to get X, Y, and Z, which would be discipline. So if you're in a situation where your toddler is not cooperating, or not even toddler, just child in general, they're doing something and they're being reactive in a moment, and you don't want to kind of swoop in with any sort of skill building or learning in that moment, because, you know, their brain is flipped. So what's your advice on how to handle that for a parent?
Oh my gosh, I have so much I want to say. I mean, first thing I want to say is, when we rely on threat-based responses in those moments, eventually we will lose, because you can't actually, especially as your kids get bigger, like if you have a high schooler and you're like, well, you can't go out with your friends, because you did that, you can't go out with your friends. Unless you're willing to like incarcerate them or call the police, they really can leave if they want to. You're not going to stop their body. So we don't want to rely on threat and control, because if as a parent of little ones, you know, you can't force someone to fall asleep, go to the bathroom, or eat. You can't force someone to do it. Right. We're not really going to control them. Okay. So we don't want to rely on that anyway, because eventually that's not going to work for us. Now, I want to challenge one thing you said there, Catherine, which is when you're just trying to get through it, you don't really want to build skills. I mean, one of the big things that Dan Siegel and I talk about, both in No Drama Discipline and in The Whole Brain Child, is that the moments we're helping them build skills and thrive and grow are not separate from the times that they're falling apart, actually, because the way we handle that moment is building skills. So let me walk you through specifically, like, let's do a tantrum moment. Okay. So my three-year-old, I have a great story of this, my three-year-old in the bathtub, and you know how this goes. It's like, He's like, this isn't even a real bath because I don't have that Lego guy I want. You know, it's like, he's not logical. And so he's about, I know the meltdown's coming. So the first thing I do is I talk to myself and I say, at his worst is when he needs you the most. And this is based on decades and decades and decades of research showing that when kids are having tantrums and they're falling apart, it's actually a stress response in their whole body. And it's really uncomfortable for them. And the same part of their brain lights up as when they're in physical pain. Okay. So when our kids are in physical pain, we're really good at nurturing and comforting and soothing. We need to do this when they're having an emotional pain kind of moment as well. But we also need to hold the boundaries, because the science also has shown for decades and decades and decades that having boundaries and limits and high expectations makes them feel safe. So what we want to do in this moment is say yes to our child's experience and yes to sharing yourself and your feelings with me, even while we say no to the behavior. So my three-year-old says, I'm not getting out. And he's throwing a total tantrum, splashing me completely out of control. The most important thing I need to do is to try to stay the calm, safe harbor in this storm, you know? And so I do that by placing a hand on my chest, placing a hand on my belly, taking a long, deep breath, saying to myself, this is when he needs you most. Okay. So the way I'm going to do this is I'm going to give him a rep or practice going from a dysregulated nervous system state back into a regulated state. The way children learn to self-soothe is by practicing being soothed by someone else. So we're going to co-regulate here, right? He's not regulated. I'm going to be his co-regulator getting him there. So he says, I'm not getting out. He splashes me. He's yelling at me. And I say, you can either get out by yourself or I will help you out. As few words as possible, because they're not processing language at that time. And he says, I'm not getting out. And he gets louder and louder. So I put my hands under his slippery little armpits. And as I'm pulling him out, holding the boundary, it's time to get out. I'm saying, you're so mad you have to get out. You really wanted to stay in. Is that right? So even though I'm saying no to a behavior, I'm saying yes to his experience. And I want him to have, let me say this, the brain is an association machine. So when my child shares himself with me, which isn't typically like, mom, I'm feeling a little dysregulated because I'm disappointed. Like, no, the way they share themselves with us is through behavior at this point in development. So if I respond with criticism, why are you making such a big deal about this? Or if I criticize or minimize, he's going to have this experience of that didn't feel very good. I don't feel good sharing how I feel with her. And I might have to not show some of that stuff. So then the brain gets a rep of like, maybe I won't want to do that again. So I want him to feel I've got you, you're safe, I can handle your big emotions, and it's time to get out. And then I wrap the towel around him. I pull him to me and I say, it's so hard sometimes when things don't go the way you want them to. I know. And here's my favorite phrase in these moments, whether they're 3 or 13, and I have a 22-year-old or to 22 to say, I'm right here with you while you're feeling that anger, or I'm right here with you while you're disappointed. Right. So our job is not to stop what's happening. Our job is to give our child an experience of feeling safe being with us. And then that very moment of what I'm doing is I'm helping him come out of the tantrum with connection and while holding those boundaries. And that is building skills because he's getting practice going into that more regulated state.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod. This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
what age is appropriate to start doing that?
Doing what part? What's that?
I mean, I think like when we think of discipline or we think of holding boundaries or we think of, teaching our child something, you know, toddlers, of course, they start, you know, some start having tantrums before they hit two, some start them in their twos or, you know, maybe later. Every child is obviously different. At what age is it appropriate to start coming in with that kind of teaching or boundary holding for a child?
From the very beginning.
Okay.
Because first of all, we're trying to read their needs and meet their needs. Again, we want to respond quickly and sensitively to their needs, particularly in infancy and toddlerhood and preschoolhood, because that's when they're getting the reps of knowing my parent sees my need and responds to me. They will show up. And that's, you know, that's one of the big things that Dan Siegel and I wrote about in The Power of Showing Up, is that one of the best predictors for how well kids turn out is that they have secure attachment with at least one person. By the way, that study, those studies and what I'm talking about there have nothing to do with attachment parenting. Because attachment is a mammal instinct. It has nothing to do with a checklist of behaviors. But it's really about your child has enough repeated, not perfect, experiences of saying, if I have a need, someone's going to show up for me. So that's what we want to be doing in those early years. But from the very beginning, we're teaching. And remember, discipline is all about teaching. So when your child, when your infant reaches for something and it's not safe, or they pull your hair, we're saying, oh, gentle. That is discipline right there. Mm-hmm. So from the very beginning, we're holding those limits. Now, one way we can get a little bit sideways here is if our expectations developmentally are out of whack. So right. I think in the bottom line for baby, I use an example of how, you know, your 7 or 8 month old, you know, throws a green bean off the high chair. And if you in your mind are like, oh, she's manipulating me to see if I'm going to pick it up. Well, manipulation is a very sophisticated prefrontal cortex function, which your baby does not have yet. But if you expect your child to put on their motor brakes and put on, you know, use all kinds of emotional regulation when you say, don't do that, when you say, don't throw, keep your food on your tray, and they keep doing it, they're not disobeying you. They just don't have the brakes to stop an impulse. And they're little scientists. They're trying to figure it out. But you can still hold a boundary. You can say, oh, it looks like you're done eating, right? And you can take the tray away.
Yeah. So when it comes to, just because when you mention something like throwing something, hitting someone, something, doing a repetitive motion that, you know, I know a lot of different parenting techniques is, of course, to keep your child safe if they're doing something that's, you know, could cause harm or cause themselves harm. But if they're doing something like throwing something off of their plate or hitting somebody or, you know, doing something like that, and you're coming in and trying to correct that behavior, is the way that you explained getting a child out of a bathtub the best way to also be correcting a behavior like that at the age?
I think, again, I want my child to feel seen, like she gets me, she understands what's happening, and she's going to help me, right? But I also, like, I never want people to misunderstand that I want you to, if your child is knocking all the books off the bookshelf at a bookstore, or they're pinching, you know, their sibling, please don't like say, oh, you're having such a hard time. What are you doing right now? No, they don't have the brakes to stop it. And actually, like, if your child hits you as they get older, they actually feel really terrible that they've done that to you. And so you're actually protecting them by stopping them from doing that. So what I would say, if they're hurting others, potentially hurting themselves or destroying property, you immediately stop the behavior. And you, in Europe, here's Catherine, we are meaning makers for our children. So, you know, when one of your daughters hears a helicopter and it startles her and she looks up at the sky, she immediately is going to look at your face. And if you look terrified, you are constructing meaning for her of that's scary and dangerous. But if she looks at your face and you're interested and you say, oh, look, it's a helicopter, you're constructing meaning like that's safe, we're interested. So all of these moments, you know, when you say, I'm going to help you stop your body, or ouch, that hurts your sister. Not, we cannot hit, or we cannot pinch. That hurts. No, I would say I would address the feeling, address the behavior, and move the heck on. We often give too much attention and conversation around it. Mm-hmm. So if your kid is biting a sibling. I would say no biting. Biting hurts. Ouch. Be gentle with sister. And then I would say something like, I think I see a bird outside. Let's go find out. And I know that sounds like distraction, but at ages 2 and 3, we really are wanting to not give more attention to the misbehavior because it actually makes them be more curious about it. But we're really just stopping. We move the kid away from the sibling. We, you know, if they hit, we might hold their hands gently. So it's totally appropriate and helps them when we set those boundaries.
What about kids saying, because my daughter talks a lot now, like she's, and she repeats so everything, which is amazing and so incredible and really just like fun and adorable to have conversations with her. But if kids are saying things like, I took her to the park the other day and a little child I saw talking to another child and they said, I don't want to play with you, or I don't want to stand next to this person. Don't look at me. I don't want you to come next to me. Those kinds of you know, phrases that kids say, I feel like, especially when they're learning kind of how to even communicate how they're feeling or what they're feeling, what should a parent's response be to not diminish or not validate their feelings, but also explain to them that like what they're saying might be hurtful?
Yeah, I think starting at age 3, 4, again, depending on the kid and how, you know, where they are developmentally, I would absolutely have that conversation. You know, in the book, Whole Brain Child, Dan Siegel and I use the phrase name it to tame it, which is the idea that we help our children make sense of their experiences. And we, this is based on a lot of science that tells us that when we accurately name what we're feeling and what has happened, it helps us process it better. Not only that, but it also reduces the reactivity of our feelings around it. So I would help her make sense of that, say, oh, that you heard that friend say that. How did that feel? And whether or not she's able to articulate that, you might even help support her with giving her almost like a drop-down menu of choices. Like, did that hurt your feelings, or did it make you feel mad? Or, you know, were you sad? You try and help her find the words. And basically what you're doing in this is you're giving the facts of what happened. You're talking about her felt experience. And then we want to empower them with how to respond or what to do. This is actually a great strategy for if your kid's having a hard time with separation anxiety going to preschool, or if anything like that is happening, we can actually end the story, which is either verbal or you can write it down, with a way to be empowered for how to handle it in the future. So you can say that, you know, did that hurt your feelings? You know, that made you sad when that friend said that. What would have been another nicer way for her to say that, right? So then you're giving her practice doing it a nice way, and to talk about what would have felt better. All of that is discipline. All of that is teaching and skill building. That's giving her possibilities for how to think about, how to process, and how to act in the future. Because yeah, she might start repeating that. And then in those moments, you can say, oh, that hurts my feelings when you say that. Can you say it a different way? It's okay to be mad, or it's okay to want some personal space, but can you say it in a kinder way? Something like that.
What do you do? Because we got this question a couple times, and it was basically the idea of two children having a disagreement or a situation and the parents not agreeing on how to handle the situation. There were questions about what do you do if a child isn't, if a parent isn't reacting to their child hitting your child? What do you do if a parent isn't doing anything about speaking badly to your child? Like those kinds of things. And you know, I have, my daughter is 2 years old, so I haven't had a ton of those, knock on wood, yet. But just the idea of people's parenting styles, of course, being different. I remember I'm 8 years older than my youngest brother. So I remember just like, you know, seeing how even his friend's parents handled things differently than my parents did, and how you handle that in the best way possible to still stand, you know, strong in the way that you want to raise your children, but also have to keep in mind that not everybody raises their kids the same way that you choose to.
Well, two things to keep in mind. One is our children are watching us. They are incredibly perceptive.
Yeah.
And so in those moments, it's like, in those moments, you're not going to be able to think about it, because there's nothing that makes us matter as parents when someone is mistreating our child, right? Like the lioness in me comes out and I'm like, I'm going to take you down and I'm going to punish you for years, even though I don't believe in punishment. I'm like, I'm going to take you down, right? But that's not my best self. That's not the person I want to be. And it's not who I want my children to see. And by the way, when we make mistakes, when we're not the calm in the storm, or we act like a crazy person at the playground or anything, those are also opportunities to go back to our kids and say, you know what? I didn't handle that the way I wish I had. Here's what I wish I had done. And so when we make those repairs with our kids, it's actually beneficial for them that we messed up, because we're giving them that that knowledge as well. But our children learn best from doing things themselves, learning how to do something by actually doing it and by watching us. So if we want our children to be the kind of people who are respectful of other people's opinions and who are curious about how different people think and act in the world, we want to model that. Now, that's going to be really hard to do in that moment. What I would say is your number one job is to protect your child. A lot of times in those moments, you know what your child can handle. Some kids, you can sit and watch and they can have conflict and they can navigate it and get through it. And that's great. That's a great opportunity. You may have a kid that's not ready for that. They're still too little. The other kid is bigger and it's not a fair kind of or productive conflict, or a really sensitive child. In those moments, you want your child to have an experience of, my mom has got it. Like, she's got my safety in mind. She's on it. Because as grownups, if we're not on it to protect our children, and I don't mean overprotect, but when we are not protective of them, then they have to be more hypervigilant in the world, constantly making sure they're okay. When they know that we're on it, we're watching, we're going to swoop in when we need to, they are free to play and explore and be curious. So in those moments, I might say, hey, come on, we're going to go over here, or it's time for us to go, or whatever. And then when I got my child alone, I would say, you know what? I wish that mom had whatever, or that didn't feel good, did it? And so I might have a reflective conversation with my child. But in those moments, you're not going to agree. I mean, most people don't agree with their co-parent fully. People say, how do we get on the same page? And I'm like, just try to be in the same book. Okay. It's good for kids to have people who are different. They kind of know, who should I go ask about this? And that's a good prefrontal executive function skill. But I think you are tuned into your child. You protect your child. If the other parent doesn't step in, you step in.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about your child looking at you too, looking at your face for reaction, my mom talks to me about this all the time, because I react very quickly on my face. And I have such vivid memories of like looking over at my mom and she would be very calm or laughing, which is why I think I laugh at inappropriate times. But I mean, if you necessarily aren't as great at that as you would like to be, like myself, how can you help in that? Because you, of course, want your child to be able to look to you for a reaction. I can even think of recently when I got the flu shot. I don't do well with shots, and I definitely did not show my daughter how to be really great at having a shot. And my husband will sometimes be like, you need to just, you know, let's be grown-ups about, let's just take a shot nicely. Like, don't freak her out. But I mean, your kids are watching everything that you do. So how can you kind of maybe be better at that?
Well, the first thing is, I mean, that's who you are. And that's probably one of the most amazing things about you is, you know, you're really authentic and you show how you feel and you share with others. It's probably one of the most beautiful things about you. And when you can be like, okay, I know I typically don't react well to shots. I'm getting this and she's watching me. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be really intentional about how I respond. But what I will say is, I think the worst thing you could do, Catherine, is to be inauthentic, because your daughters are incredibly perceptive already. I mean, even your infant, incredibly perceptive. And if they look at you and say, were you scared, or did that scare you, or did that surprise you, or are you mad? And you say, no, it's fine. That is the worst thing you can do, because they know deep in their brain and in their instinct that that's what they saw. They picked it up on your face. Mm-hmm. And so their only options at that point are to say, I guess I can't trust myself for what I thought was happening, or I can't trust my mom to tell me the truth. And what typically happens is children have to be able to trust their parents biologically, evolutionarily to survive. So they start not trusting themselves. So what I would say is, if she says, was that scary? You can say, oh, that surprised me. Or that wasn't what I was expecting. Or, you know, the thing was really cold, you know, whatever. So you can say, yes, I'm frustrated. And then here's the next part. You show them how to be resilient. You say, oh, that surprised me. That, ouch, that hurt. And I know to rub it. And now it'll feel better. Every minute it'll start feeling better and better and better, right? So then you come in with the resilience. If you find yourself kind of reacting authentically to something, you have the reflective dialogue with your daughter later, like, hey, let's tell the story. Again, back to name entertainment. Let's tell the story about when mom got the shot. Did you see, what did mom's face look like? And she will surprise you because she'll make your exact face and then you'll see what she's seeing. And then you can say, what do you think mommy was feeling? And you really just, you workshop it, you know, you really do that. And then you can also, if you're worried about that specific thing or anything else, role play, have her give you a shot, pretend shot, you give her a shot, and you bring fun and play into it. When we are playful, and that's so awesome about your mom and laughter. And by the way, when we laugh inappropriate, it's usually a stress response like yelling or crying or anything like that. It's our nervous system releasing some of our stress. But anytime we are playful about something or funny or fun about something, it actually stretches our window of tolerance. So for example, when I've had kids dealing with big time anxiety, separation anxiety for when their parent was going out for the evening or something like that, if I could have the kid, when mom opened the door to go out, that was the cue for her to throw socks at her dad. And she had planned like putting dad's underwear in the freezer and a fake bug in his dinner and like set up this whole thing around pranking dad. Then all of her associations with mom leaving were about something fun and silly and playful, and it allowed her to tolerate the anxiety. That's just one example. But when you're silly and playful, it's actually, let me say it this way, silliness, playfulness, joy is kind of an opposite neurobiological state as fear and threat response. So anytime you can bring in the fun and play after that to process it, that will help.
Awesome. I mean, I could sit and just ask questions all day long, but I'm really grateful that you took the time. I know people are asking about which books. They're behind you perfectly, but Bottom Line for Baby and Whole Brain Child, No Drama Discipline, bunch more. We're going to link them all in the newsletter and also in the caption below this video. So thank you so much, Tina. I'm so grateful. I learned so much naturally from you. Thank you again for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. I post all kinds of stuff right here on Instagram.
Yes, make sure everybody, if you know, for people who are going to watch this later, follow Tina's page. She posts tons of like a wealth of information for all different age groups, not just toddlers. And they're always done in a really calm and approachable way, which I always find, especially as a new mom, the more approachable things are and less intimidating, the more likely I am to just like sit and listen to a video or read something. So I'm really grateful how amazing you are at doing that and getting the message across. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for being such a bright light in the world. You just bring so much joy and light, and there's so much noise in the world, and so much advice that parents are just flooded with. And some of it's not great. And I always feel so honored to partner with people who are bringing light and connection to people. And so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a great day.